Hello and welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. Our mission, to make government contracting better, one contract at a time. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand how the other side thinks. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition Solutions. Skyway helps companies of all sizes to know more, do more, and win more in the government market. Skyway's coaching and support have helped customers win over $1 billion in contract awards. Visit skywayacquisition.com to get started. This is a milestone episode for the Contracting Officer Podcast, so let's get started. Hey, Kevin, today is a pretty special episode. This is actually episode number 52. That is 1 year of podcasts.
Yes, this is awesome. We have created 20 hours of content. We've met some really awesome people. I got to do a TED talk, a TEDx talk about podcasts.
So today we want to use this episode to answer a very common question that we've gotten as we over the course of the past year, which is how did this thing come about? Why do you do it? What are you going to do next? And actually answer a little bit of what I wish I knew and what you wish you knew, because we've asked other people that same question. What have you learned? What would have helped a whole lot if it would have been explained earlier in your career? And those are the kind of tidbits we're trying to give here, right?
Yeah. We realize that we've interviewed other people and asked them, what are the three things you wish you knew as a CEO? And we never actually asked each other that question. Right. So that's a great topic.
Right. And I may have more than three, but I have three that I've thought of today. This podcast started out 3 years ago, I guess, when we were at the NCMA's World Congress, and you had just given a talk about some topic, and we were sitting in the bar afterwards with someone, just going back and forth, like we do on the podcast, and our friend that was there said, wow, be great, I'd love to listen to you guys talk about this topic. And from that, you came up with the idea of a joint presentation at the next World Congress, right?
Right. And we seemed that we had a good banter. And then I had this idea from a friend of ours who has a podcast, I'd been listening to podcasts, and the idea was, wow, this is a great environment for the two of us to do an actual discussion on lots of topics. And it was funny that for the first few months, it was a lot of, well, where do we start? And what's the first topic? And how many topics? And how long? And how many people? And do we have guests? And millions of decisions, but you know, it's that whole thing of when you have millions of options, it's great. But when you have millions of options, it's exhausting because you got to ignore 99% of a million options. So it took us a few months to figure out.
Right. And I have an audio background from years of playing guitar in bands and stuff. And you have, like you said, millions of ideas. So yeah. Between those, it took us a while to figure out how what to talk about and how to actually do a podcast. It turns out it's not that hard. And there's how many podcasts out there? Thousands and thousands of people that have figured out how to do this.
Yeah. There are 250,000 podcasts just on iTunes.
Yeah. So it is pretty easy to record one.
Yeah. And counting, actually. And by the way, speaking of you being a musician, one thing I think people probably don't know is, for those of you who don't know, Paul actually wrote and played and recorded the theme music for our podcast. That's actually Paul playing that. So
that was the most fun. And now that you've said that, I need to redo it and make it better.
We need a new theme song for the next year.
Yeah. So it's been a year since we published the first one, right? This is episode number 52. So this is actually 53 would be the 1 year. We're using 52 as a milestone.
Yeah, the idea was birthed officially in March of 2014, and then we said, hey, here's how we're going to do it in June. And it took us until December 1st to actually launch the first one. So
this is actually the completion of the year being episode 52, not the beginning of the next year.
Yes. Yes. This has been an adventure. And the funny thing is the goal was, we're going to do 50 episodes. If nobody's listening, if nobody's paying attention, then we'll stop. But within, I don't know, maybe within about 15 episodes or so, it really started to catch on.
Although it started to spread a little bit.
Yeah, 15 was still, I mean, that was still almost 4 months of us kind of, okay, we're talking, make sure anybody's listening. It felt like crickets for a while, but that's how podcasting goes. You know, this is us celebrating the fact that we hung in there.
And it turns out 52 episodes in a row is It's harder to do than I thought. There's not really a break of taking time off here. You got to be doing this pretty regularly.
And a big shout out to Jeff. Jeff Sperry has been a huge, he's the guy who posts the actual website content and all that. So that doesn't get done if every Sunday night when you send in the file, he doesn't post it. So Jeff has been a phenomenal part of the team that people don't even know about.
So what are we talking about today? We're talking about why we did this podcast thing. And overall, we thought it was, we're trying to help people, trying to make things better one contract at a time. Although we didn't realize that at first. We kind of found our way to that theme because that's what we were talking about. We just hadn't actually written that down like that before. It's pretty crazy though. A podcast that talks about government contract. I mean, that sounds like the most boring thing that you could ever talk about. And who's actually going to listen to people talk about government contracting? But the key is that I think we recognize that government and industry don't always understand each other. And that's that we're not completely unique in that we worked for the government and now we work for industry. There's lots of people that have done that. But I think there's more people that have only worked for the government or only worked for industry. And they don't always understand what the other side is going through, right?
Yeah, and there's a big need to clarify what the other side is thinking so that we can get more done. We can know more and do more. That's the idea. And it's been the feedback we've gotten from people has been really motivating when we're sitting
good and bad point. Feedback.
Yeah. So there's some people didn't like what we have to say and they're not interested in, and that's fine. But the vast majority of people who say, yeah, this is great. I really appreciate it. Can you cover this? The ideas we get from people about, can you talk about what a competitive range determination is? I don't know what that is. It's awesome to be able to get feedback and go, wow, we're really helping people. So it really keeps us going.
And to that one guy, I know I'm an idiot. I know I don't know everything.
Yeah, that was funny. And that's honestly, that's one of the biggest challenges. To be totally honest, is keeping just enough information in these podcasts, because invariably we have this innate feeling of, well, what about this? What about that? We got to cover this circumstance. And what if it happens at the end of the fiscal year? It's like all these variables that we just can't talk about all of them. And every once in a while, there's somebody that would say, well, you left out this whole section. I'm like, yeah, because that's another 20 minutes of talking.
It's hard to get it down to just a one topic, one simple topic. I was going to say it's hard to get you to stop talking, but the truth is there's plenty to talk about and we have to try to limit it to a little box for a podcast, because nobody wants to listen to a 2.5 hour podcast about government contracting.
And the purpose really was to have just-in-time learning for the listeners. Yeah. The idea being that if you need to know what a competitive range determination is, if you need to know what a CLIN is, if you need to know what weighted guidelines is, we could spend 6 hours explaining all the nuts and bolts of it. But if you can understand the basics in 15 minutes...
Yeah, it's not supposed to be a how-to. It's not supposed to be a tutorial. It's supposed to be exposure to the topic and basic understanding. And then there's other ways to get more in-depth understanding or help. That leads me right to my next point that I wanted to make. Why the podcast? So there's a lot of classes that teach the FAR. If you're on the government side, you have to take certification classes where when we were growing up in the profession, there was like a 4-week in-person class that you had to attend that they went through the FAR one part at a time. You know, there
still is.
There's tons of teaching on the FAR, or you can just read it. It's not that riveting, but you can just read it. But it comes out that the contracts profession is actually a thinking job. You can be trained on the FAR. You can be trained on all the policies and procedures that you need to follow, but anyone can blindly follow policies and procedures. But the thinking part of the job is what's important.
Yeah, despite all the regulation, you still got to get something done. And that's why we're trying to focus on the ground level. I was on a podcast a couple days ago, and the guy was really kind of focusing on the budgets and the policy stuff and the stuff that happens in DC that has a wide swath of an impact on the overall acquisition process. And there are plenty of people talking about that. So I don't get into that one. I get into, we're trying to help the small business in Pittsburgh that has 6 employees that does IT services. How do they function in this environment? that's what the podcast is about. And it's hard to keep it at that level, but that's what we want to create for the listeners. So they go, oh, okay, now I understand the 80-20 rule. I get that. I understand right. what a small business set aside is for. It's like, explain it so that I know what I can do with it. Not- right.
And if a government person is listening to that, hopefully they're able to say, I didn't know that small businesses don't even know how to do this little thing. You know, I didn't know that when I speak as a government person, a lot of the words don't make sense to small businesses that have not been involved in this government acquisition world before.
Yeah, we had one of my favorite comments was, this is from a, actually it was a mid-sized company, contracts manager emailed me after we put out the podcast. It was podcast number 7. We talked about the special operations FAR supplement. She said, wow, I didn't realize that SOCOM had their own FAR supplement.
Yeah, and they do.
We to us that seems, well, obviously, right? But again, she's not a contracts person who lives in the FAR. So to be able to help people understand that kind of stuff, it's super fun. And to be able to help a contracting officer understand that when you send them a clause, they probably have never actually read it before. And you read it because it's your agency and you, but we'll put it this way. You've been exposed to the clause maybe 20, 30, 50, 100 times, whereas this new company just got this contract and their clauses that they don't even understand yet. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to switch to the quasi-interview section here. So, Paul, what do you wish you knew when you were a contracting officer? What are the three things?
So let's start like really early career. So, you know, I came straight out of college and jumped into working major system acquisitions. And it's not like I'd never had a job before. I'd had lots of jobs paying my way through college. But
in a band.
Yeah, and played in a band. But working a major systems acquisition with giant defense contractors, I wish I had more understanding of how big business works. That's not something you can take in a class. The good news is I didn't know how big government worked either. So I didn't know what wasn't possible, and I was pretty naive about that. And early on, I mean, we were both interns at the Air Force at Wright-Patt to start out, and early on, I think it was my second job, I had this program manager. His name was Bob Marks, and that guy was crazy in the best possible way. And he really took advantage of FAR Part 12 of commercial acquisitions and said, we can buy airplanes commercially. We're buying commercial airplanes. Why don't we buy them like industry buys them as best we can, instead of on a cost-plus fixed-fee contract development kind of thing like the government buys military aircraft. And his loony ideas tied in with the fact that I didn't know that no one had done that kind of stuff before. It was awesome to have somebody that didn't give you any of that, oh, this is how the government does it. He was like, let's see how we can do it. You know, at the same time, there was another guy in the same group, John Meyer, who was the opposite. John actually carried the FAR around the building with him. If he was going to a meeting, he would carry his copy of the FAR, I guess, to intimidate people with it. Yeah, you better be careful what you say or I will open this thing. But
I'll stick it on you.
Right. So he was the exact opposite. So I love the guy. I'm not saying anything bad about that, but I got both ranges of anything's possible and here are all the rules, and got a chance to shape myself out of that. And then, you know, we both had Jeff Malott as the contracting officer on those commercial programs. And Jeff really taught us that, or at least me, and I think based on our earlier conversations, you know, he taught us that this is a thinking job and you can do more than just quote the regulations about this is why this has to be done this way, right?
Yeah, he was really good at pointing out the idea of read the regulation and give me a couple of options of how to make it work. And that was, I was brand new to the industry, right? And I didn't know that there were ways you could say, oh, no, FAR doesn't say you can't do that, so we can't do it. There, I didn't realize that was really an option, because his attitude was, let's find a way. So the concept of being creative was really introduced. And again, lucky that it was within the first, 18 months of doing this for a living. And it stuck. So that's why I wanted to give a shout out to Jeff. when I started in my first position, actually was in research and development. And a lot of it was learning by doing because I had lots and lots of contracts. And some of them were big, some of them were small, but just by volume of opportunity to learn stuff, you know? The thing that I really wish I knew was that there was more to know. And what I mean by that is that I came to this career field thinking that, okay, once I get level 3 certified in government contracting, once I take these 8 classes, you know, then I'll get it. You know, like it's a law degree. You just check a box and you've got it.
Yep, I'll know everything there is to know. Level 3, the top level.
That's right. When I get certified by NCMA, then I'll be, you know, it's a never-ending flow. And because it's a thinking job. And it's things like, just because you mastered this type of contract, not all of the nuances of that contract type are transferable to a different industry. And understanding that there's just a never-ending supply of things to learn about. And that's what makes the podcast so much fun, and what's consulting in this business, what proposal writing, all the stuff that we do is so much fun because there's always a nuance and a strategy to everything. I mean, I've bought aircraft, commercial aircraft and military aircraft, training simulators, space launch systems, software development, all kinds of crazy stuff. Worked at 3 different Air Force bases and doing all kinds of different things. But another person that I want to definitely put a shout out, and we're going to have her as a guest on here coming soon, is Shelley Hall. And Shelley was probably about 20 years experience when I got there. And she is what I would consider to be like a 9th degree black belt in service contracts. She knows service contracts better than anybody. I remember some of the conversations.
She taught me the value of comfort food.
There's that too. And she retires in a couple of weeks, which is, you know, congratulations. It's really excited for her. And she's going to be a part of the team. But what's really amazing is that she could take this complex thing of a government service contract and explain it in ways that you're like, oh, you're 18 months into this. And she'd explain it in a way that you can just get it. And that kind of stuff is what we spend our time on the podcast doing, is help people just show it to them in a way they can understand it. Yeah. So that was kind of the big takeaway for me from all the different things that I touched. Is the biggest learn. So those contracting officers who are brand new, don't think you're ever going to get it all. Embrace that and enjoy the journey. And same thing on the government, on the industry side. As a small business, you're never going to master all of the parts of the business development process. I mean, there's always something new to learn. And some people, that's exhausting, and the industry's not for them. But for those of us that love challenges and love the thinking job of this, it never gets boring. And hence all the passion in my voice. So how about your mid-career? How'd you take all that stuff? What was the next level of cool?
That's good. It's good to talk about what I learned as I progressed. That's good because what I wish I knew early in my career is everything that I know now. But that's not possible.
That's called wisdom. That's how it works. Right.
So mid-career, once I got some experience, I wish I knew that I should talk to industry more because, you know, once I figured out the basics, then I thought I knew what I was doing. And it turns out this stuff is really hard and you'll never learn it all. So I was actually annoyed when contractors would call me or drop in my office and trying to shape the acquisition. But it turns out they're trying to help me. They were trying to help me not annoy industry, trying to stop me from making things more complicated than it need to be. And it's, you know, it's not always a bad thing for industry to help shape an acquisition, even though, you know, they're trying to shape it so they can win that particular one. There's actually good information coming out of there because they see things from the other side, that from, you know, a different perspective than the government does. And I wish I would have paid more attention to it back then. I probably need to apologize to a few industry people that I got their badges pulled so they couldn't come in the building anymore.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah.
So what did you wish you knew as you got farther, more experience, farther along in your career?
For me, that kind of tags to what you said about you know, talking to industry more, but mine was more specific to communicating more. And what I mean by that from the government side was explaining so my program manager, my customer, the user, the finance folks, the lawyer, everybody understands what are we trying to do? There's this instinct of it's a process. So therefore, it's just a paper process. Therefore, I'm going to make a source selection plan and I'm going to send it to a lawyer and he's going to look at it. Talk about it. Figure out what you're trying to do with it. Spend more time making sure you understand what is the overall goal. Have the customer in the room when you have the conversation about evaluation criteria. I mean, the more I figured that out and the more actively I talked about how this process works as a team sport, acquisition is a team sport, the better off we'll be. And of course, now that I'm on the industry side, same exercise. Get that proposal manager involved when you're working on capturing the opportunity so they're familiar with it. Get the customer involved in the decision tree as far out as you can. Help them understand, don't wait until the gold team review to look at this proposal. You've got to look at it sooner than that because it may say something you don't like or it may have left out something you want to say. I mean, it's a team sport. So the value of communicating across the team early and often, in fact, one of the core values of Skyway is we're willing to risk over communicating. And that means maybe we have one too many meetings. Maybe that means we send one too many emails. But you know what? The risk of not communicating far outweighs the risk of not talking enough.
Yeah, so I should amend and just say I was a slow learner, because I did have great examples on how to communicate across the team and between industry. You know, going back to Bob Marks, when we bought aircraft commercially, we spent a lot of time with the companies that built the aircraft, talking to them about exactly what we were trying to do and getting their feedback on what was possible with their products. And wrapping that into the source selection, into the RFP. And we took the users, the guys that were going to fly the planes and the guys that were going to maintain the planes, the guys that were going to crew the planes, we took them with us to talk to industry. So there was lots of communication, but there was a time that it took me to remember the value of all that. And I think later on in my career, I got much better at that.
Yeah, it's a lesson that I wish I'd have learned sooner and continue to learn. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard to take the time to communicate and make sure that everybody is aware, the right people are aware. Because you can push that to the limit and have 100 people in a meeting that's totally useless. So you got to be kind of careful you don't overdo it. But that fine art of getting just enough communication is pretty cool.
So the last thing I want to talk about is later in my career as I moved over to the industry side, I wish I had known how little industry contracting people understand about how hard it can be to get things done as a government contracting officer. Because when I first started working for the industry side, some of the things I said, people looked at me like I was crazy because I was fresh out of the government side and I knew exactly what the COs were going through that we were dealing with. And sometimes on the industry side, I feel like the tendency is just to think that government people are stupid and that's why it takes so long. And that's not the truth. The truth is that it's hard to get stuff done sometimes. And if you've never been on that side, just like if you're a CO and you've never been on the industry side, you don't know how hard it can be for a contracting person in on the industry side to get something done. But I didn't understand the value of getting to know the other side's perspective. And that's sort of one of the driving things that led me and you here, I think.
Yeah, agreed. And it's understanding what the other side has to deal with. You know, what are their milestones? And do we all assume that they're the same milestones? And they're not. In fact, in some cases, they're really, really, really different. And just being able to help people stitch those disparate answers together is a big deal. Like one of the presentations you and I gave was that the perception is that the government team sometimes feels like they're sprinting and the industry team feels like they're clock watching. And the truth is somewhere in between. And just to be able to help them understand that is phenomenal. And I guess we really had no way of seeing that on the government side. And I like being able to see it from both sides. It's a unique perspective that's one of the rules of the podcast is you got to, you know, what we actually talk about that. Why does industry care? Why does government care? It's because we've seen it from both sides. That is probably one of my favorite lessons learned at this stage of my career, that I'm able to see both sides clearly. I mean, the things that pop up off the page for me are so different now than they were even 5 years ago.
Yep. And the best part is 5 years from now, you're going to look back and say, man, I was so naive. I thought I was seeing things clearly, right? That's the way the world works.
Yeah, who knows how many. We'll be at podcast number 250 by then, so it's pretty exciting.
So where are we going with the podcast? That's the common question of that I think we've both been getting lately is you just going to keep talking about the same things? What's the next step? And I think the next step that we've been talking about, we've gotten great feedback when we have guests. And as you were just saying, contracting is such a broad field. It's no one knows everything. Getting the guests on gives us even more perspectives, because you and I have a lot of perspectives, but we're just scratching the surface. And we've gotten a lot of great feedback from people when we've had guests. So we plan to have more guests, bring in guests to talk about things that we don't have any direct experience in, or very little direct experience in. I got a question the other day from someone emailed me and said, can you talk about non-appropriated funds? Well, I can talk broadly about them. I understand what it is, but I never got to work with them. But I know someone that spent a good portion of their career dealing directly with this little niche thing called non-appropriated funds. So we're going to try to dig into some of those topics just to give people exposure to them in a way that you don't get from, you know, a level two certification class.
And the other big takeaway for me is that we want to keep this focused. It's so hard. Sometimes it's hard for us to you know, keep our laser focus on keeping it as contracting officer's perspective and keeping it in actionable stuff. We're not talking policy and those kind of things. We want, so that is where we're going, is that we're going to have guests and give them the opportunity to give you the same actionable kind of content that we give now. That's why I think a lot of the great feedback has come from people who've actually, everybody who's been as a guest has been a contracting officer, is that it's such actionable, down to earth content. And that's probably our biggest challenge and our biggest opportunity, is to keep it at the ground level. So you're going to see more of it's going to seem like a laser focused topic, like what is weighted guidelines? That's like one paragraph out of the DFARS. But that kind of content, the feedback we've been getting is that's what people appreciate.
Yeah,
and the contracting officers we're bringing will be the same way.
Well, that's the thing, is we haven't actually had a guest that's a current contracting officer yet, and that's coming up very soon.
Yeah, we're working on a couple of them. And if you're out there listening, you want to be on, send us an email. We'll figure out how to make it all work.
So where are we headed with the website, the experience overall?
So now we have 52 episodes. When you go to our site and you scroll down through a large pile of content, it's much more effective for it to be organized. So we're going to start organizing it around intro versus introductory level versus mid-level versus senior. So for example, one could argue that What is a CLIN is a really simple one, right? But it's one of the most popular podcasts. And then What is Weighted Guidelines is pretty advanced, or What is Sections L&M is pretty advanced. And we want to make sure that it's organized on the site so that people can find the content more quickly and easily.
Don't know exactly how that's going to look yet, but we understand that that's something that would help.
Yeah, and honestly, things like, now that we have sponsors, the funding pays for things like upgrading the website. So
Yay.
Having a search box on. Having a search box so you can find, where is that CLIN? And where's the one about CLINs? And where's the one about small business set-asides? And where's the one about protests? And you don't have to scroll. You can just find it. But that's, you know, beyond my skills of website management.
It's coming. All right, let's wrap this up today. And we'll wrap up the way we do a lot of podcasts, which is, why is this important? And this is the self-serving. Why do we think the podcast is important? So this is the topic of many of our presentations that we've given. Government acquisition is hard, and fixing policy from the top down is very hard, difficult, or maybe it's even impossible. There are so many policies and regulations out there, and so many opposing viewpoints that changing policy is very difficult.
And there are lots of people talking about, there's lots of noise at the high end level of policy and politics and all that kind of stuff. So having us focus on the ground level stuff is that's why this matters. It actually helps people when they understand, oh, that's how I can make a difference in how Section L is structured. That's how I can keep somebody from bidding on something they shouldn't be bidding on, you know, that kind of stuff.
And that's why, like, halfway through the year, we solidified that concept into, you know, our mission is to make government contracts better one contract at a time. And that was it all along. We didn't know how to say that at the beginning, right? It is that if we just can make, at the ground level, make this one change that makes it easier, over time, maybe there's a snowball effect and things can start getting better, because you and I are not going to change acquisition policy.
And, until we convince them to do a podcast as an industry day. But that's all. Well, and so one of the things I do want to throw out there is, as I appreciate the listeners enduring this process as we're kind of putting the plane together while we're taxiing.
Yeah, yeah. Like we didn't get all of our. I don't want to listen to the first podcast.
Yeah, we had the theme song, but that's about it. But a lot of our messaging wasn't as clear. They were longer. They didn't sound as good. I was even more long winded back then. So I really appreciate that as we get better at this, based on feedback and based on just practice, it's kind of cool how it's. People have hung with us as we've gone through this journey. It's been fun, and I'm looking forward to keep it going.
All right. Thanks for joining us all year on the Contracting Officer Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please tell a friend. Word of mouth is the best way to spread the news.
And if you need direct help from a team of contracting officers, you know where to find us, skywayacquisition.com.
All right, Kevin. Thanks for a great year. I'll talk to you soon.
This was fun. See you on the next one. See you on number 53.
Woohoo! All right, that wraps up year one of the Contracting Officer Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us each week. And remember, if you have questions, comments, or complaints, send me an email at paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com. See you in year two.